ranked choice is run at some point, I think, in this afternoon.
And it's significant. So he is called Omar Fateh, the Mamdani of the Midwest, but of Mamdani himself. And President Trump saying overall, he wrote, Trump wasn't on the ballot and shutdown were the two reasons that Republicans lost elections tonight. He refers to himself in the third person, the shutdown and that he himself wasn't on the ballot.
I mean, I just heard the excerpts from his speech earlier in the program, and when he said, you know, I am an immigrant, that's such an important part of his win, of his victory, and that was very striking. First, because of the Islamophobic campaign that really was ran against him in the final weeks of the campaign. Also, because as you mentioned a few minutes ago, there was the first Muslim woman to win a statewide office anywhere in the country. That really stands in parallel as a companion result, given that context. But also because we saw the topic of immigration and ICE, and obviously Trump's agenda around those issues, be very important around the country. Just as one example, the Republican nominee for governor. Okay, well, there were a lot of races where immigration was on the ballot and a big issue, and that's what I was going to end with.
Daniel Nishanian, you got a lot in there. Editor-in-chief of Bolts. We'll link to your coverage of the elections at democracynow.org. I'll be in St. Louis Friday night. Check our website, democracynow.org.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service providing help from trained counselors for when stress, worry, and sadness strike. Help is available by calling or texting 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
Called the Great Imposter. Donald Trump is the great imposter. Good deceiving his foes and his friends. He acts out too much. He's lonely and fears it's the end. Oh yes, he's the great imposter, adrift in a world all his own. He's played a bad game, and to his great shame, he's fearing he'll die all alone. Great imposter, the scowling he'll never forgive. He seems to be what he's not, you see. He's using his brain as a sieve. He's using his brain like a sieve. Or too real is this leaking of make-believe squeals. When the Russians and Donald Cook deals. Oh yes, he's the great imposter, paranoid, crazy, insane. His craziness you can plainly see, causing us nothing but pain. Causing us nothing but pain. Causing us nothing but pain.
Hello and welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sherry, and if you're listening to this broadcast, it's 8 a.m. on Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. I'm excited to bring you content you won't hear on any other station. Today, we're talking about something that ripples through every corner of our community. Food, shelter, dignity, and decisions we're making at the city and state level. In Oregon right now, the headlines say benefits are shrinking, camping bans are returning, and national rhetoric is shifting from toward punishment instead of support. Our theme today is criminalized poverty, SNAP cuts, public camping bans, and the politics of homelessness. Before we do, a quick reminder, if you're hearing this and you're in a position to volunteer, donate, or engage in your neighborhood, stay tuned to the end of the show and I'll give you some ideas. In the meantime, you might remember that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is no longer receiving funding thanks to the new administration. So please consider donating to KBOO as part of your monthly charity donation, your holiday giving. We would really, really appreciate the support. You can donate by going to kboo.fm online and click that donate button, or you can download the app if you already have it downloaded. Just open up the KBOO app and hit that donate button in the right-hand corner. And if the tech stuff is a little much, you're not really into it, we do take paper. You can send us a check at KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, and the zip is 97214. Again, that's KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And, you know, the more you can support us, the more we can bring you content from underserved communities and subject matter that you may not hear anywhere else. Over 1 in 6 Oregonians rely on the food aid program known as Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. But this month, families across our state are facing a twin squeeze. The federal government shutdown has left the program under threat. The state officials warn more than 750,000 Oregonians could lose benefits as early as November 1st. So this past Saturday. For many households, the change isn't abstract. According to the Oregon Food Bank, a recent federal budget act will cut SNAP by an unprecedented $186 billion over the next 9 years. And Oregon will feel this quite deeply. You can go to the Oregon Food Bank website to learn more about that. We're talking about families already struggling, skipping a meal, trying to decide between medicine and groceries, even missing rent payments. When SNAP disappears or shrinks, something else has to give, and that's every time. And often, it's local stores, volunteer food pantries, and the churches that are scrambling to fill in the gaps. Here's part of the recent broadcast on KATU in Portland. Several businesses are stepping up to provide free meals to people losing SNAP benefits. Here's part of the broadcast. So one of the companies is Legacy Coffee out in Gresham. They stated that starting November 1st, they'll provide free sack lunches These are intended for those who are losing their SNAP benefits. Each sack lunch will have a PB&J, chips, vegetable pack, and a juice box. And they are so generous for doing this. The local coffee shop announced that on Facebook. Legacy Coffee Company PDX is located at 112 North Main Avenue in Gresham. Again, that's Legacy Coffee PDX located at 112 North Main Avenue in Gresham. And they are open daily from 6:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Whether you're losing your SNAP or not, go visit these people. They rock. Okay, they are giving out free snack lunches to people who are losing their SNAP benefits. So this could even be little kids. They're filling those sacks with PB&Js, chips. I believe it's either or a vegetable pouch, but and a juice box. The next one is Heretic Coffee in the Reed neighborhood. Again, even if you're not losing SNAP or you don't have a need for SNAP, go visit these people. They are stepping up to help the community where it's needed most. Heretic Coffee in the Reed neighborhood. The coffee shop is already giving away breakfast while raising more than $72,000 after the business went viral for its efforts. Heretic Coffee is located at 5120 Southeast 28th Avenue in Southeast Portland's Reed neighborhood. Again, that's Heretic Coffee at 5120 Southeast 8th Avenue in the Reed neighborhood in Portland. This location is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. and on Saturday and Sunday from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. AG Burrito has multiple locations, and they are stepping up with Oregon State Rep. Ricky Ruiz's office by offering free breakfast burritos with the option of rice and beans starting November 1st. No questions asked, just say SNAP burrito. Oh, these places are just filling my soul. Their available locations are in Gresham, the Gresham Burrito Shop, Troutdale Burrito Shop, Wood Village Burrito Shop, and Lake Oswego Burrito Shop. I believe if you go to the AG Burrito website, you will be able to get directions or the addresses. Farmers Market Oregon City. The year-round Farmers Market is offering tokens to spend on EBT-approved food. In response, the Oregon City, I guess in response to the SNAP cuts, in response, the Oregon City Farmers Market is prepared to offer our SNAP customers $20 in tokens to spend on EBT-approved foods. In addition, double-up food bucks will be available even for those with a zero balance, the organization stated on Facebook. The Farmers Market is open Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., but they will be closed on Thanksgiving. Clackamas Community College, Green Lot 1, off the corner of South Beaver Creek and Claremont Drive in Oregon City. Nan's Taqueria in Happy Valley, located in the Sunnyside Food Hall in Happy Valley. Nan's Taqueria, located on Sunnyside in the food hall in Happy Valley, is offering to feed people losing their SNAP benefits as of November 1st. That was stated in a partnership announcement with the Willamette Week and KATU. Nan's Taqueria is located at 15640 Southeast Happy Valley Tower Center Drive in Happy Valley. That was Nan's Taqueria in Happy Valley is located on 15640 Southeast Happy Valley Town Center Drive in Happy Valley. Nan's Taqueria is open Sunday to Thursday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and on Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. And the last one for right now, you can get the full list on the KATU article talking about the SNAP reduction. The last location we're talking about is Hog Wild Barbecue in Happy Valley. Anyone who comes in with a valid SNAP / EBT card can receive a pulled pork sandwich with beer battered fries or a kid's meal. So if you have a SNAP or EBT card that's valid, you can go on into the Hog Wild Barbecue in Happy Valley and get a pulled pork sandwich with beer battered fries or a kid's meal. I wonder if why it's an and or, but that's another question. It's not an and, it's an or. So I don't know if that's per person or exactly what. Every Saturday in November at 11 a.m., they will have grocery bags available for families. One grocery bag per family. So every Saturday in November at 11 a.m. at Hog Wild Barbecue in Happy Valley, they'll have grocery bags available for families. One grocery bag per person. Quantities depend on whether they'll receive donations. Consider calling them at 503-775-6200 to learn about their other super cool options that they're providing local families. So Hog Wild Barbecue is located at 9226 Southeast 82nd Avenue in Happy Valley. They do have a website. It's hogwildportland.com. And again, their phone number is 503-775-6200. And you can learn about the other businesses on this list at the KATU website. So why does this matter to individuals? It's a ripple effect in our economy. And I did this for my other podcast, talking about the impacts of SNAP. Every dollar of SNAP in the economy generates $1.50 to $1.80 in economic activity, resulting in an approximate annual benefit to Oregon at $1.6 billion. That's why it matters to individuals, and that's why it impacts the economy so much. When people have less money to spend on food, local grocery stores see less food traffic. When they can't cover utilities or rent, they're one layoff or one health crisis from becoming homeless. And one of these days, I'm going to talk about some of these things because I'm just amazed every single time we go through economic crises like this, and the poor and the medically challenged are always the first impacted. It's kind of like when businesses start laying off, the first people they lay off are marketing and sales. Why would you lay off marketing and sales people? They're the ones that bring you customers. But anyway, so that's whatever. So here are a couple of questions to keep in mind. What does it say about the community when food assistance is used as a leverage point in federal politics? That's another striking element of this. The federal government at this point is telling people you're going to be able to afford food or health care and not both, right? We're going to give you food or health care. We can't give you both. And they aren't giving us anything. We pay for it. So I just don't understand the philosophy behind all of this. So there's that one. And then the other one is, what happens when a shift from helping to punishing those who fall through the cracks? We may not pay yet, and I hope at some point we will. At this time, we may not pay taxes to cover healthcare at the federal level, But we do pay taxes, and a lot of our taxes go to healthcare. I don't off the top of my head remember what the percentage is, but it's bigger than welfare. Welfare only takes 11% of the national budget. And I think healthcare was like 17%, and then education. Military and defense takes up the largest portion currently of our federal budget. And a lot of that is federal contracts that are bloated. It's not taking care of our military, which is not only the biggest in the world, but our military budget is larger than the next seven industrialized nations put together. So when they start talking about representation and making sure we, the American people, are benefiting from the taxes that we are paying, they have been way off the mark for many decades. The government, I've had people say, so you want the government to pay for everything? And I say, I pay taxes. My taxes are paying for the representatives at the federal level to create policies that benefit the American people. Yes, I do expect them to pay for some things. And if they if our taxes are this high, I currently right now pay more taxes than any of the billionaires who live off dividends. I pay a higher level of taxation per capita of what I bring in than any billionaire in this nation. And those billionaires own over 50% of the wealth in this nation. And the rest of us are fighting for what's left. And it's slanted and it's wrong. I'll get off my soapbox and play some music for you.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29th.
In the city of Portland, the mayor has decided that the time for rules is back. Beginning November 1st, the city resumed its enforcement of the camping ban in public spaces. We're talking about sidewalks, parks, streets, vehicles, wherever quote-unquote reasonable shelter is available. Now, I have some personal views on this. If you recall back in 2015, I believe it was, maybe earlier, when Charlie Hales first initiated the public camping ban policy, I was livid. And here's my reason. Instead of seeking out funding for shelter space or treatment options back then, he allowed everyone to just live and sleep on the streets in public anywhere. And I've always wondered exactly what problem that solved. At the time, you'll recall, there was a big push that being homeless was not a crime. And it's not. Living in poverty is not a crime. Being homeless is not a crime. People, you know, you could be making $100,000 today and destitute tomorrow. That's just how things happen. But you don't just open up all of the public spaces for people to camp wherever without any kind of support. Right. And that was my big issue at the time when when Mayor Hales initiated that program. Oh, I was livid. And I still am. Wheeler should have cut it off. But they are fearful. Apparently, this is my guess. They are apparently fearful of asking the people in this region who are not supporting the communities as much as the communities are supporting them to step up and start supporting the community, pay taxes, right? You hear all this boo-hoo about the high taxation rate in the city of Portland, county of Multnomah, and the Oregon state overall. Okay, so what's happening with the money is one question, and a valid one at that. Two, corporate taxes are the lowest today than they have ever been in history. And that's at every level. And so if these companies, because what businesses do and what they did here is they move in because it's relatively inexpensive compared to New York or LA or Seattle, even in some cases, they devastate the economy. So people who have lived here their entire lives can now no longer afford a place to live and end up on the streets. And then they say, oh, our work is done here, and go off somewhere else. And I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable. If you are going to come in and devastate our economy, then you should man up enough. And I know that's a toxic term right now, but you should be professional and ethical enough to lift the people in the community that you devastated. They aren't collateral damage for your profit. So Mayor Wilson says that his office has enough quote unquote consistent available capacity at overnight shelters to move ahead with reinstating the rules. And OPB has a story about that. The policy gives police and outreach teams the power to issue citations of up to $100 or even subject these victims to a year in jail, potentially. And they are victims, many of them. A lot of the people who are homeless have lost jobs, had a significant medical issue. There are some in our community who are elderly on Social Security and just cannot afford to live. They are victims of what capitalism has, poorly managed capitalism, has done to our communities. I am not necessarily gung-ho pro-capitalism, but I see the positivity in that financial policy. I do understand how capitalism works, and I do understand why so many people support it as a financial policy. I do when it's done correctly. When it's done like it's being done now, absolutely freaking not. Absolutely not. So on the surface, this sounds like an effort to restore order. And when they say restore to order, they're talking about clearing up camps, opening sidewalks, addressing safety and public health issues. But when you ask critics, the story looks really different. Counselor Jamie Dunphy argues that enforcement alone won't solve homelessness. And he's right. He's on top of it. It may simply just push people out of sight further into East Portland and beyond. They are no longer allowed to go up and down the walkway out in Southeast Portland. If you recall, a few years back, there was a huge effort to clean up the pathways in Southeast Portland for biking and walking. And yeah, people want to feel safe. And in many cases, while I am the, you know, soft heart for people who have ended up homeless having been there, I do understand the concern because when someone is in a place of survival, that's not their best place. That's not the best time to meet a human being. They're in their survival mode, right? So they are looking for food. They're looking for money. If you've lived on the streets, it's a hard life, and you're potentially, a lot of the people who are addicted to drugs today weren't when they ended up on the street. It's survival. And yes, people with altered realities are going to do things that are not necessarily appropriate. So there is an element of safety that needs to have some consideration. So I understand why the push to clean up the pathways, of course. We want to be safe in our communities. And that's another argument for the people who came in and decimated our communities to step up and help fix it. Another concern is of 3,500 beds in the county, thousands remain unfilled, which is odd. I don't know enough about that. I'm not educated enough about that subject to have an opinion. That is what it is. Another concern is that 3,500 beds in the county, thousands remain unfilled out of that 3,500. Some congregate shelters opened this year, report up to 80% vacancy. And again, OPB has an article on that. And if you go to the OPB website, the title is Portland Will Begin Enforcing Its Camping Ban Today, which is when I'm recording this is November 1st. What does this mean? And that's the title of the article, and it's by Alex Zielinski. Portland will begin enforcing its camping ban today. What does that mean? That's the title of her article, and it just came out this morning. This raises a question that if shelters are technically quote-unquote available, but not truly accessible or safe for many, how is enforcement equitable? The mayor stated from one angle, the message is we want to restore public spaces. And then from another angle, we're criminalizing survival. And that leaves him in a tough choice. So I took a recording from the City of Portland's YouTube channel, and here's what he had to say about reinstating the camping ban.
We can't arrest our way out of homelessness, nor should we. But for too long, we have failed to enforce our existing laws on dangerous activities that hurt the community. You may have heard that we will return to enforcing city laws on camping on November 1st. I want to clarify what that means for people experiencing homelessness and our city. There are two pieces to this ordinance. First, if we have enough shelter, which we do, camping isn't allowed in public spaces. Second, any camping must be responsible. Encampments can't block pedestrian access, set fires, dump trash, or do other things that hurt people or the environment. I've asked our police to issue citations for these violations. They'll be focusing on law-breaking behavior and actions that harm our community. No one will be arrested simply for camping, nor should they. However, we will arrest those who have open warrants or who have broken the law in ways that prey on our community. Our courts have an important role in helping individuals make better choices. That's why I've been meeting with representatives of our court system to find ways we can help connect individuals with the services they need. We've put our heart and our soul into our emergency shelter beds and day centers. We have resources available for those who need them. Every person deserves a safe bed every night and to live in a safe, sanitary, and accessible city. Finally, I want to say thank you to our city outreach team and Portland Police. It's important that they have resources they need to work with vulnerable individuals on a case-by-case basis. I believe this effort will save lives and restore vibrancy and livability to our city. Like you, we've been monitoring every step. We'll scale our successes and we'll learn from our failures. Thank you for all your support.
I am honored to have Brandi Johnson for an interview. She is the executive director of both Love One Community and the Father's Heart, here to talk to me about the impact of the SNAP reductions on the people they support and get a wider range view of the overall impact. Thank you for joining me, Brandi. Can you give the audience a little rundown, a little introduction about who you are?
Absolutely. I am the executive director of Love One and also of the Father's Heart, both social service agencies in Clackamas County, primarily serving unhoused individuals and families, but also folks who experience things like housing insecurity and need connection to resources in and throughout Clackamas County. We have some brick and mortar space, our day center, our transitional housing program. But we also have mobile outreach teams who go out and connect with folks. And we do housing, navigation and retention work. And we work with the court systems a lot on behalf of folks. So we do a little bit of everything.
Just you do. And it's grown and grown and grown. And all the time I've known you, it just keeps growing and growing. I'm just my heart. You fill my heart every time. So with the SNAP reductions beginning this month, we're already hearing that families across Clackamas County are struggling to make their grocery budget stretch. From your perspective and that of Love One and the Father's Heart, what changes are you seeing on the ground, and how is this affecting the people who rely on your outreach teams for food, hygiene, and other supports?
Yeah, those are great questions, Sherry. And
I love that.
Yeah, no, it's the whole you, right? So when news like that comes out, obviously a lot of folks who literally rely on that for survival, it makes perfect sense that they would go into panic mode. You know, they're already in survival mode. So to heighten that is appalling. The reality is, even with the recent order by the court to prevent, you know, the freeze on SNAP benefits being paid, the reality is, what does it look like then for those benefits to be paid? What's the timeline? How much? Is it going to be the full amount? Is it going to be part of the amount? If it's part of the amount, what is going to need to be put into place system-wise before those funds are distributed to folks? One example being one of our folks who has been outside for quite some time. Their monthly SNAP benefit was about $260 a month. And several months ago, that was cut to $18 a month. And this is someone who is unable to work, and is obviously unhoused and living outside. So there's a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's been wild already. This is something that's been impacting our work drastically for months, since the beginning of the year, and changes have been implemented. And so really our teams have been on high alert already, as far as rounding out more food supports. You know, we provide resident services at a 55 and older, permanent supportive housing site in Clackamas County. We have the transitional housing program that is 40 contracted rooms, many of whom are filled with families. And then we have our day center. So, and then our 17 laundry hygiene outreach events a month. And so we're feeding people through all of those avenues, in addition to the several hundred individuals that our organizations have housed over the last several years, thanks to the Metro Supportive Housing Services measure. And so when we house folks, we continue to provide case management and retention services. And a huge key piece of retention work is making sure that folks who are housed have food to eat. Otherwise, yes, they will spiral back into many of the things that led to their houselessness to begin with. So already we provide weekly food boxes to upwards of 40 households a week. We have our meals that we provide at our events, 3 meals a day at the day center, a food pantry, and also perishable foods at the other sites that I mentioned. And we will be in short order operating the 13-bed shelter of the Crisis Stabilization Center in Milwaukee. And so that too will necessitate food for folks who are living there. And our teams have really risen to the occasion. We have been super creative, and scrappy is my word of the year, I've decided. Super scrappy in how we glean food. We are Gleaners members. We partner with Mud Blossoms. We work with Clackamas Service Center. We work with local food pantries. And actually, it's interesting because for quite some time, we would receive food from our local food pantries to help round out what we had. But with the funding cuts and access cuts, we actually, some of our team have worked out partnerships with our food pantries to provide them with some food. So it's a wild landscape. That's what we're seeing at the moment.
So you answered basically the next question, which was how your teams are responding to the drastic measures that are being taken right now. What I would like to do is ask how we can help. How can the Portland or Clackamas County community help Love One and the Father's Heart be successful in your work?
I appreciate that so much, Sherry. Something I saw online the other day, and it really stuck with me, especially as I've seen lots of folks coming together on social media asking how they can help, offering meals and food and drop-offs. It's so heartwarming. And it's also frustrating because we should be doing this all the time. It shouldn't take this level of crisis to decide that we want to care about our neighbors. And so I am both encouraged. I am both encouraged and extraordinarily frustrated because it's literally the work that Father's Heart and Love One do every day that sometimes our community pushes back against, when in reality it's literally this sort of work. So but back to what you're saying, and something that I read was, please take a few minutes and explore the existing options and how you can support those, just like what you're doing. Because just an example, a lot of us already have connections and resources, and so if we can work together and really collaborate versus just driving in, side by side lanes on the highway, we're going to be able to accomplish a lot more. So one of the things that we've been really working hard on is identifying all the existing resources for food and getting our folks enrolled in programs like Gleaners and making sure that folks who are housed but are starting to come to us for resources, for food resources, also know where else to look. So making sure that we communicate, collaborate with our community about what's out there, what exists. But really for Love One and the Father's Heart, the biggest need right now is volunteers to deliver food boxes.
Okay.
That's a huge one. At the end of the week, on Fridays, we deliver food boxes, and anywhere from a couple of boxes to maybe 5 or 6, and we have routes established. But we need some volunteers to deliver food. Okay. I was talking with the team because they've been holding meetings and just working tirelessly about this. We're seeing an actual increase in donation of food that we have to get creative about space for, putting it into boxes and doling it out, is food storage. So keeping food at appropriate temperatures, and here's something that is just ironic to me, is that, let me find my notes from Steph, is that we assume we're going to start seeing an increase in some of the foods we receive already because people are not able to buy them at the grocery store, and grocery stores give us their day olds. So the less people are utilizing their food stamps at the store, it's likely that as organization, as service organizations, we're going to start seeing an increase in those donations that people can't afford.
Yep. That's part of this show is talking about that. Yep.
Okay. I was like, that absolutely makes sense. It's absolutely wild. So we need more food storage. And at this point, we're still we're limited with space. So adding freezers, if our staff start to put freezers in their homes, we are absolutely exploring that idea. We would need to purchase the freezers. But we also are wondering about if anyone has any connections to some local food storage. That would be really helpful. That's kind of our magic wand ask. And then the third thing I would say is cash donations allow us to meet those immediate needs without any hesitation, whatever it is, whether it's ordering grocery delivery from a store, Ubering someone where they need to go to get the food, whatever it is, that helps us be really flexible and actually saves money in the long run.
Where can people go to find out more?
More about Father's Heart and Love One. So loveone.org. And the Father's Heart is the Father's Heart Street Ministry. And if you just Google that, it'll pop up. We're in Oregon City. And there's online donation options. And both allow for if someone wants to designate, hey, this is for food insecurity, something like that, or just a general donation. That's really the focus of our efforts right now is keeping people fed. I was just at lunch and I was talking with some friends and we've gone from fighting for people to get housing to literally fighting to keep people alive with food.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty gross, isn't it?
I just don't know what to think about that, honestly.
Yeah. In the land of plenty.
Oh,
America
yes.
is the land of plenty, and we are yes. fighting the Trump administration to feed people.
Yeah, I will tell you, Sherry, that yesterday I was walking around Washington, D.C., because that's where my next conference is, and saw the White House. And as we were walking past, we could hear the jackhammering of the wing that is being removed for the ballroom. And to be here in this city for a conference on how to navigate the needs of rural communities for housing. The irony was not lost.
Oh my dear. It's really just something to behold, isn't it?
It is.
I do have some information for you for when you get back, and I do have somebody you can reach out to for storage, potentially storage. So
beautiful.
It's someone that you probably know that I don't know that you have the resource, that they have the
Great.
Resource.
Thank you, Sherry. That would be amazing.
Yeah, ma'am.
Thank you.
And I am up on helping on Fridays for sure. I can
Thank
come
you.
Out and help you on Fridays. That's the one day I have. Nothing on my calendar is on Friday. So, yeah.
Oh, that would be hugely, hugely helpful. And yeah. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandy. I really appreciate you being here. And I will talk with you when you get back. In the meantime,
Great.
Can people reach out to the Father's Heart about doing
yes.
delivery, drop off, whatever?
Absolutely. So again, it's loveone.org. and tfhstreetministry.com. Those are the two websites. And there's links there, not just to donate, but also to send messages.
Okay.
So if someone wants to email with questions or they have ideas or, have a donation that they want to make, just anything is helpful. So email us, call us. However, we're happy to help connect those dots and make sure people stay fed.
You're fabulous. Thank you, Brandy.
Thanks, Sherry.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm always glad to get Brandy's real-world perspective in the mix. At the national level, we're seeing and hearing rhetoric that frames homelessness and mental illness as public safety problems rather than social safety issues or social support issues. For instance, recently, Donald Trump wrote up an executive order that suggests we should institutionalize people who are unhoused or supposedly mentally ill. And while I haven't seen specific instances of that here in the region, it echoes across municipalities that homeless people are now seen less as neighbors who need help and more as nuisances that must be removed. Here's a report from Chris Daniels over at KATU.
A new executive order from the Trump administration is pushing cities to clear homeless camps. The order aims to prioritize civil commitment for people with mental health and substance use disorders, and it directs federal agencies to prioritize funding for higher barrier shelter programs. And the order could have an impact for communities across the Northwest.
Tonight, we're on your side breaking down what this means for Oregon and Washington. In just a couple minutes, we'll dive into how leaders in Washington are responding to the order. First, K2's Christina Giardinelli digs into what power the federal government has over Oregon's civil commitment laws.
At a federal level, civilly committing someone, so taking them to a mental health institution against their will, involves a constitutionally protected right to due process. In Oregon, what a judge has to look at before civilly committing someone is much more lengthy, and the federal government cannot supersede those Oregon laws. Point-in-time counts show homelessness nationwide has been on the rise since 2017. The latest executive order from President Donald Trump vows to address the issue by changing the approach. The order claims most homeless people have mental health issues or substance use disorders and promises to push for them to be civilly committed. Tung Yin, a law professor at Lewis and Clark, says at a national level, constitutional rights come into play.
So the Constitution says, you know, you basically have certain rights, and states cannot infringe those rights. And so the key one here we're talking about would be due process, meaning that what does the government have to show before they could commit you against your wishes? What do they have to offer you the ability to do? And typically that would be some sort of hearing.
Oregon has a long list of conditions that have to be satisfied before a judge can order someone to be institutionalized against their will. Yin says the federal government cannot change that.
There's not much the president can do, or even the federal government as a whole can do to force states to give less protection than they want to give. All they can do is say, you have to adhere to the Constitution minimum.
What the Trump administration could do is have federal agents round people up into federal institutions using those less strict federal due process standards.
There is not a large federal infrastructure for institutionalizing people, so it is unclear where they would take them if that were to take place. If you want to learn more about federal grants potentially at stake because of this executive order, you can go to our website at k2.com.
Locally, we're starting to see that extend into policy. Enforcement of camping bans, fines, citations, pressures on shelters. This ties into a broader legal backdrop. Consider the case of the City of Grants Pass in Johnson. That was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2024, and it held that broadly applicable laws prohibiting camping on public land do not inherently constitute cruel or unusual punishment, even for the unhoused or unsheltered neighbors. Well, I remember when I heard that, I thought, who are these people? But that's just me. They are of the highest of legal minds. So that's a legal green light for communities to treat homelessness with enforcement. But we have to ask ourselves, is this really the community that we want? One where the response to poverty is a citation rather than a conversation. Harming someone with a fine when a shelter is inaccessible or when mental health or addiction are present raises serious moral questions. Is this about public safety or public neglect? I'd encourage you, our listeners, to rethink the language that we use, and not necessarily me or my listeners, but I hear it, illegal camping, blocking sidewalks, encampment sweeps. These are loaded terms. They obscure the real issue, unaffordable housing, job futures, and systematic healthcare failures. We must ask, when does enforcement become displacement? And when does displacement become criminalization? Let's turn to what's next. Elections and local accountability. Coming up, 2026 local elections here in Portland and across Oregon. The next cycle will include seats at the Portland City Council, the local school boards, and other key positions. Who we elect matters big time. Why? Well, because these are the people who will decide how much funding goes into a shelter. How do we negotiate the balance between enforcement and support? What's our vision for street safety, for public space, or housing policy? If we vote based on sound bites or fear, like camping down the street or trash in the park, we're giving up the chance to have a nuanced, human-first policy. Instead, I invite you to look for candidates who talk about root causes like housing first, mental health, living wages, and community outreach. In future shows, I will be bringing up some programs that I think are at least viable from local groups. A few questions to put on the next ballot review might include: does the candidate believe in housing access as a right or just a temporary fix? Will they fund outreach and long-term solutions or just more citations and sweeps? How will they support local food insecurity issues like SNAP cuts, not just homelessness? Because these issues are all interconnected. A family might lose SNAP and then fall behind on rent, and the next step is housing instability. And then maybe camping becomes the only path. The decisions made by local leaders can either break the cycle or keep it going. So as you're listening, consider this. Advocacy doesn't end after this broadcast. It starts in your neighborhood, your city council seat, your vote. We're nearing our time, but these conversations are just beginning. Today, we looked at three things: food access and SNAP cuts, public camping bans in Portland under Mayor Keith Wilson, and the national rhetoric that increasingly frames homelessness as law enforcement rather than welfare. We heard from Brandi Johnson about what's happening on the ground, the lived reality behind the statistics and the ordinances. Now, Brandi is in Oregon City. I will look for someone to talk with in Portland. Let me leave you with this thought. When people lose their homes or their groceries or their dignity, we all feel it. Not just in our hearts, but on our streets, in our neighborhoods, and in our economy. When someone can't eat or can't sleep, or is afraid of a citation instead of getting a hand, we lose a piece of our humanity. This is the story of homelessness, but it's also the story of us. If you can, reach out, volunteer with Love One Community or the Father's Heart. Support your local food bank. Get engaged in your next local election. Talk about these issues around the dinner table and at your workplace. And we need to make a distinction of what is political and what is an issue. Homelessness is a civic issue. It is a public safety issue. It is a humanitarian issue. It is not a political weight. I don't encourage people talking about politics or religion at work. Homelessness and the impact on our community is not political. It is essential. It is public safety. It is public health. It is humanity. And it has very little to do with politics. Thanks for joining me on PDX Progressive Talk Radio and KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sherry Meredith. Make it a great week, and remember, this city, this state, and this community, it's ours to build. It's ours to build together. Make it a great week.
If you worked a little harder, then you'd have a lot more. So the blame and the shame's on you for being so damn poor. It ain't the price gouging, and it ain't the inflation. It ain't everyone above you trying to make a buck from you in school and the whole congregation. I had that reduced lunch, I had the benefit cards. Never occurred to me to blame my family for life being so damn hard. I should have paid attention back when I was in school. Then I could figure up the tax, I would know a lot of facts. I missed the class where they taught the rules. I was memorizing capitals, I was in the spelling bee. I must have missed the part where they taught the art of private equity. I was selling chocolate bars, I had a disorder. I was cutting up a frog, got lost in the fog, learning how to play recorder. If you only worked a little harder. If you worked a little harder. If you worked a little harder. You'd have a lot more. So the blame and the shame's on you for being so damn poor. It ain't the banks, and it ain't the taxes. It ain't the payday loans and high rent homes and predatory fees and practices. Wave your dumb flag, whatever it means. But you should ask yourself, when it comes to health of the poor, really all that free? If you're worth a little.
Hi, I'm Lillian, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7.